You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard to Prout Financial Design's new Retirement Radio here on WTCM, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Welcome back, sir.
It is great to be back live on Thursday, August 11th, 2022. Great to be here. Thank you, Ron. 2 weeks of
The best of.
Pre-recorded, and there is Heidi Cartwright, our managing executive and RICP. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's a beautiful day outside.
Isn't it absolutely crazy?
It is.
I think it's
these
my favorite time of the year. We'll take it. You bet. And joining us, too, is Deanne Jennings, our Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be on the air with you today.
All right. It's great to have you. She's going to be doing our stats today, which there are a bunch of them. Surprise. All right. First, we try to fly above the political conversation. I don't know that we can do that too today with the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. But we to address the question, this may be somewhat helpful. I view this is a personal commitment I made some time back because there are so many political conversations that occur from who's on, Mr. Bongino, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, others who talk about the in-depth politics of the day. We try to intentionally stay with the financial side. Now, some would say, well, what political side are you coming from? We try to stay away from that intentionally because, again, we're trying to educate on the financial world today, whether it's IRAs, the recent tax act that's not yet passed. There is some question on that. So that's the first part of this, and that we'll see. It certainly looks like it's going to pass, but it may not by the House. So it's already passed in the Senate with help from Kamala. I think I pronounced her name properly, didn't I there, Ron?
That's the way I believe it is pronounced,
there you
sir,
go.
Yes.
So we want to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act today and what it could mean to you for taxes. The Inflation Reduction Act and then Heidi is actually backing up just a little bit, is going to talk about lump sum versus taking a lump sum from your pension plan and or versus taking the income. Now, this may help us move into whether or not you should take a lump sum from the lottery, too, if you win the lottery. We thought that kind of tongue-in-cheek descriptor there are helpful piece. So the Inflation Reduction Act is a significantly scaled-back version of the proposed Build Back Better Act. It's also known by some other names. That was defeated in 21.
We won't talk about those names.
Many of the tax proposals in the Build Back Better Act didn't make it into the new bill, but a few did. The proposals with the most significance, according to this article from Forbes magazine. A 15% minimum tax rate on the adjusted financial statement income of corporations with average annual adjusted financial statement income of $1 billion. So a 15% minimum tax. In essence, a tax rate hike. Number two, making a five-year holding period for carried interest to be taxed as long-term gains rather than ordinary income. So instead of being able to carry it forward, they will have to declare it as long-term gains, which is necessarily a lower tax rate under most tax code numbers or tax income rates than ordinary income. Generally, this is for private equity, venture capital, or hedge fund firms. They carry interest forward because of the gains that are imputed within their portfolio, if you will, to allow them to participate with the gains that they achieved. So the people who run these funds are able to participate in the gains, but they carry that forward because they haven't been realized yet. So we'll see whether or not that sticks and whether or not that makes any difference. Obviously, if we have a new Congress in the fall and or a new person in the White House of the opposite of the opposite party, some of this may get broomed, if you will. It may get overwhelmed with other legislation.
And just from a practical standpoint, because I'm always looking at how do you institute this stuff, that looks like a nightmare on the data side. The complexity that they'll add by putting some of these in, it's going to take a lot more effort to figure it out.
Well, it's going to take more computers, and because you brought that up, the IRS is going to get a whole lot more computers with their additional funds that they're going to be getting, new technology. Mm-hmm. So they'll be able to operate much more quickly, Ron.
And if the computer doesn't work, they'll have plenty of guns. They can just shoot it and get a new one.
So you're talking about the fact that the new IRS agents in the website or being hired are being told that they need to be willing to carry a gun.
Willing to carry and use deadly force. And they've also been buying weapons and ammo. Mm-hmm. The IRS has.
That's yeah, they talked about that on Fox Business this morning, the actual ad for hiring new agents.
See, I knew this was going to come down to this.
It's a whole new look for the IRS.
Yeah, a whole new look. Nice gun there, mister. So, and then number three, or Mrs., however. So a $3.1 billion to increase IRA taxpayer services, just because you brought it up, that's the next point, number three. 47.7 billion for IRS enforcement, $25 billion for IRS operations. Is everyone taking notes?
Mm-hmm.
And $4.7 billion for IRS technology upgrades. That's what I was referencing, their faster computers.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's been hearing that they're 25 to 30 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Do need
Boy, imagine the training that's going to have to go on there. the new software and computers and all those people, and everyone has to learn how to operate this stuff.
Well, if they're using computers that are 30 years old, yeah, that'll be a learning curve there.
What's that, a mouse?
Well, that's the heaviest computer I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, I'm throwing it out today. So the bill also includes climate change programs in the form of various tax credits. The bill is 725 pages long for those who like to read things and still being analyzed. And guess what? There will be a lot of additional information that will be coming out in the coming days. I mean, I have so many articles in here. I killed a lot of trees, given what we're looking at in terms of the extensiveness of this package. There is also an increase of $250,000 for the R&D credit that can be applied to payroll taxes for qualified small businesses. So there could be worse things. That actually sounds good. Extensions of the non-business energy property credit, solar credits, for 10 years at a credit rate of 30%. These changes, effective for tax years starting January 1, 2023, are still very tentative. So most of the tax increases start immediately. Many of the other provisions start in 24, 25. The prescription control, I believe, starts in 2025 as a part of this. It is from what I've read so far, is limited to the 10 drugs that are there. It is limited to 10 drugs that are currently not generic in nature as paid for and or assisted with Medicare and the payments related to prescription coverage. So other parts of this, the additional IRS funding is and this comes from a policy, Mr. Joe Simonson, policy from the Tax Foundation. Is that right? Yes. Okay. Under the Inflation Reduction Act negotiated by Joe Manchin, the agency would receive, the IRS agency would receive $80 billion in funding to hire as many as 87,000 additional employees. That increase would more than double the size, which currently is at 78,661. Mm. So if all the agents hired according to this bill are indeed hired, I mean, where are they going to find all these people, right? About that amounts to about 160,000 IRS agents total. That would make the IRS one of the largest federal agencies. The Pentagon houses roughly 27. Now, this I thought was very interesting. The Pentagon houses 27,000 employees, according to the Defense Department. While a human resources fact sheet says the State Department employs just over 77,000 staff. The FBI employs approximately 35,000 people, according to the agency's website. And Customs and Border Protection says it employs 19,536 Border Patrol agents. The money allocated to the IRS would increase the agency's budget by more than how much percent? Guess high,
1,000%.
Close. 600%.
600%.
Or some people would also say six times. Mm. In 2021, the IRS received $12.6 billion. Although Democrats say the hiring of additional IRS agents will help root out tax cheats and other criminals, federal tax revenues have risen steadily over the past several decades. Now, you were talking about this before I went on the air, Ron. Federal tax receipts are projected to hit $5.7 trillion in 2027. Up from just over $4 trillion last year, an increase of about 40% under current law, and I'm guessing they're assuming any kind of growth in the economy. Some of the new spending includes $161 billion for clean electricity tax credits and $161 billion for clean electricity tax credits. I got to get my B's and my M's right there. Okay. And $64 billion in the new Affordable Care Act. The majority of new revenue from IRS audits, and this is probably the most important piece, from IRS audits and scrutiny will come from those making less than how much per year?
$200,000.
Right on the money.
Hey!
Right on.
Win, Ryan.
Score.
No, really?
According to a study from the Nonpartisan Joint Committee on Taxation, the committee found that just 4-9% of money raised will come from those making more than $500,000. They've already, those are the ones that the IRS is already going after in terms of making certain that because that's where the returns are, no pun intended. That's where the returns for them making certain that they're following the rules are actually being done. Contrary to Democrats' claims that the new IRS agents are necessary to target millionaires and gazillionaires who hide income. Actually, the word there is billionaires. Senate Republicans argue that the roughly $45 billion the bill puts towards hiring IRS agents could be better spent on other priorities. I won't go into that. When faced with a decision to spend $45 billion on Americans' largest revenue collection agency or give it back to parents to help them get their kids the help they need, the Senate needs to choose the latter option every single time, Scott told the Free Beacon. So these numbers are really eye-popping in terms of where the revenues are actually going to be coming from. It's going to be coming from, you guessed it, the middle class, even quasi-upper middle class folks because of this additional revenue, additional rules and regulations that will be followed because of additional IRS agents. So that's where the majority, they're saying, the revenue is going to be coming from. And in terms of, is this actually going to stop inflation? It's basically as statistically near zero as you can actually get it. The actual reference from the Congressional Budget Office, which says negligible at best, the Bipartisan Policy Center, small impact one way or the other, in quotes, and the Penn-Wharton budget model, I thought this was an interesting tongue twister, statistically indistinguishable from zero. Mm. That probably means it's at zero in terms of an inflation reduction package.
I thought I heard one time somebody was going to introduce a bill that said you can't name a bill something that it doesn't do. Or there might have been, it might have been a suit about that one time.
There probably was. I remember TEFRA. It was actually making me think of this. Now, this goes way back. The Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act. I think that's what they should have called this thing, entirely responsible.
Oh. Well, Ed Slott always says, whatever the title is, it means the opposite. Yeah. So if it's the inflation reduction, it's the inflation.
It's increase. Like the jumbo shrimp oxymoronic phrase. Yeah. We can almost call it an oxymoron, can't we? Mm. Proper definitions. So Heidi is going to be talking about, should I accept a lump sum or buyout offer? This occurs a lot in pension plans. Should you, once we're getting more clients all the time, getting these offers. Well, I know I'm going to get, put it simply, $500 a month, or I just got this offer from my former employer. They're willing to pay me $69,000 as a lump sum. Which should I take? And so that's what Heidi wants to discuss here today.
Right. And so this topic, let's start with what is that lump sum? A lump sum buyout is like what Dennis just described, is a limited opportunity for a defined benefit plan participant, or maybe a pension plan is a more familiar term, to elect a one-time cash payment in exchange for giving up future periodic payments. And some buyouts are offered to participants who maybe are approaching retirement age. That's a common time period for these to be offered. But also, they may offer it to you when you're already taking these periodic payments. So let's talk about some of the questions that you should be looking at, because everybody's situation is different, so you'd want to talk to a financial advisor. But what are some of the questions that the two of you should talk about when you're trying to decide, should I or shouldn't I? So one of them is, what is the affected interest rate that is generated by these calculations? When you're looking at that monthly payment, like Dennis said, of $500 versus a month versus that lump sum, what is the implied interest rate there?
Okay, hang on. Before you go anymore, there are three important parts of the calculation on this.
Exactly.
Number one, how long do you intend to live? How long?
Your longevity.
Tongue-in-cheek, your longevity. Number two, what's the income versus the lump sum?
Correct.
And thirdly, when you input those, given the payments versus the lump sum, then what is the interest rate that you will be earning equivalent? So when you're getting the monthly payments, there's an equivalent interest rate you're then receiving on that money, given that you were going to draw that income for that period of time. Okay,
right.
So that's important to consult with somebody about, all right, a professional.
And when you know that interest rate, when you do that calculation, it helps you make decisions like, is this a good deal compared to maybe something else that I might do or a different product I may invest in?
Correct.
So just in general, though, the lower the interest rate assumption, that assumed interest rate, then the higher the lump sum will be. So,
well, many plans have been assuming lower rates of interest because rates did indeed go so low. So what that means is the income, the lump sum versus the income has been rising steadily in relatively to the income itself. So that lump sum all of a sudden ballooned in the past few years significantly compared to regular incomes that might be generated.
So in your example, if you're getting $500 a month, that's $6,000 a year.
Yeah.
And if you say, I'm going to live 20 years, that's, what's that,
$120,000? Well, 240 payments. What did you just say? Oh, okay.
$6,000 a year for 20 years.
Oh, yeah, $120,000.
So you think, would you start and kind of look at that and say, well, that's how much money I know I'm going to take in. Then you factor in, what are they offering you?
Right, and you want to see what that implied or that embedded interest rate, that assumed interest rate that's in there, because then you'd be able to look at maybe another product that may be earning X percent, and you can say, oh, I'd be getting more,
you mean
a better return.
You mean if you took your lump sum and put it elsewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
got it. So that's one thing to look at. Something else is, how is your health? What's your family history? Do you feel like, do you have longevity in your family? Is there a probability that you're going to live much longer? Or maybe you have health issues that, you know, you're more cautious about what that longevity looks like. So if you are in that situation, you want to look at this because it could be more valuable. The pension is more valuable the longer you live. If you have a shorter lifespan or probability of living longer, you may want to look at that lump sum. There's also other provisions of a pension plan that come into play. Some of them only pay during the lifetime of the participant. And if they pass away, then the pension stops. Some may offer a spouse or a, like a 50% of what the participant was making. Some have 100%. All of those different options and whatever one you've chosen should make an influence on your decision on whether you take the lump sum or not.
Absolutely. So how long are you going to take that income? How long do you intend to live, in essence? And usually you want to be more conservative in that estimate. By that, we mean you want to estimate or think, or you want to not estimate, you want to compute, if you will, a longer life expectancy than you are intending, because many people today live much longer than they thought.
That is correct.
So include that in the calculation, all right?
Right, and that's something you really want to fully discuss with your financial advisor. So then another question we could look at is, how financially secure is your employer? Have they been funding the pension plan adequately? If they haven't been funding the plan as much as they should, maybe the funds won't be there to make that payment. And you're like, wow, does that ever happen? Well, the answer is yes, it does happen. In the news recently and over the last couple of years, UPS has had some problems with meeting that obligation to their employees. So that's just one example.
The bill had actually served to fix that particular problem.
Oh, yeah.
The COVID relief bill.
Yeah, last year, one of the COVID relief bills had a provision in it where it gave $86 billion to bail out failing union pension plans. So some of the ones that were in trouble were bailed out. But it's just something to keep in mind, and you want to look at that, you know. Look at that report that they offer you on the assets in the plan to see if they look like they're robust enough to meet the obligations.
Somebody did text, I think you might have covered this, said, what's the reduction in a monthly pension to have it forward to a surviving spouse? Is that something, I think you mentioned, that's a consideration, right?
Right. Usually the single life payment is going to be the highest, usually. And then if you wanted to insure your spouse's life as well, like the pension to pay out to your spouse, it would be a reduced amount from that because the pension is really covering two lives there. So, but we can't tell you what that number is going to be or what that percent is going to be because every single plan is different.
And that's another part of the equation. What kind of a cut in that benefit are you going to be getting to cover your spouse, whether it's for 50% or 100% of your benefit? Obviously, if it's 100% of your benefit, then you as the primary person taking that income will have to take a lower income to satisfy both of your income and or life expectancies.
Right. Okay, another question is, will your spouse agree? Because pension plans are under the Department of Labor, they follow ERISA rules, and the spouse may need or must consent before you can receive that lump sum. So if you're married, you really want to talk about it.
Yes. Now, another part of this, too, to remember is you may have an option for an increasing income benefit. So for those of you who have that benefit, that can make that income much of much greater value. And some plans don't even offer this lump sum. We're speaking specifically about plans that are offering you a lump sum, whether at retirement or in some cases before you're ready to retire.
And then another question can be, is what is your personality like? How do you handle money? Is having a lump sum not a good idea for you? I mean, some people have great financial and fiscal discipline. Some of us, we don't have that tough discipline. So maybe it's better to not have the lump sum available to you that you can get at it. And so you want to look at your daily habits and how you handle money and which one fits your personality better. That should be another consideration.
It reminds me of clients who said, you know, I don't even want to know that I can take money out of this thing. I just don't. They trust themselves, but just enough to be dangerous in some respects. Mm-hmm. So they want to help instill discipline in their willingness to spend those funds. You bet.
Right.
Hey, what do you do if you have, I remember you worked years ago, you had a lot of GM people got that offer, and you really had to help them work through it. But
right.
I don't know what the size are of the buyouts, but six figures, Where can you dump that then? If you say, I'm going to take the lump sum and I'm going to dump it into X, what are the options? Or just some of the general options there.
That's sure. An excellent question, Ron. Good job. You can, if you take that lump sum, you can roll it into an IRA.
Uh-huh.
An IRA under your control.
With no tax. Uh-huh. So the roll is non-taxable to an IRA.
Nice.
So when you do that, then you are now under the IRA rules, so you may have a little bit more flexibility on withdrawing money. Also, maybe you don't want to touch that money. You wouldn't have to take the monthly payments. There's also Roth conversions that are available for funds that are in IRAs, which are things that aren't maybe available in that pension plan. So you want to take a look at that as well. Your tax situation, are you going to be much better off having the IRA versus the defined benefit plan? But as you can see, it's not one question. There's a bunch of things that you should be looking at.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, too, that we're talking about this. I mean, just had an in-depth conversation with a client yesterday about this very subject. Company offering him a lump sum versus an income. And we went through that discussion in depth. Okay, here's the equivalent lump sum value of the interest rate that you're getting on that lump sum, assuming you're getting this much income and assuming that your life expectancy is 30 years. We went much longer than he was anticipating just to make certain and cover the worst case scenario. In some regards, the worst case scenario is living too long. Indeed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, great stuff there. Eh? That came off the EdSlot website.
Correct.
I think Ian wrote that, did mm-hmm. he not? Ian Berger. That's great.
So if you find yourself in this situation, it's so important to seek out a financial advisor, correct?
It is, absolutely. And talk through this. Sometimes that's just a face-to-face conversation you want to have, and we're certainly available to do that. 231-947-3992.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings in from Prout Financial Design, live on a Thursday, recorded on a Saturday morning after 9 o'clock.
You bet. Rebroadcast on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Thank you. Thank you to each of you for listening. getting ready for this program last night and this morning as well. I just honestly love doing this because it helps keep us focused on what's going on. It helps relate to our clients and to you folks out there in the airwaves. What's happening? This is why we've joined the EdSlot program, so that we've got more definitive information than we ever would otherwise. Mm-hmm. It is not cheap for us to be a part of that, but that has benefited us and I think our clients in the long term by getting that really good information from them. What are the rules? What are the regulations? How do you benefit yourself with this blizzard of new tax laws coming in, all the complexity of it? I would almost call this new act the Tax Accountant Employee Retirement Income Security Act for them, right?
Yeah.
Man, they're going to be busy just trying to figure out what's going on with this, so, and helping their clients as well. So before we get going in the rest of the show, we've got our Deanne stats. Deanne stats, if you would, Deanne.
All right, here we go. Over the last 30 years, the S&P 500 gained 10% per year. If you remove the best 22 trading days over the entire three decades, the return for the S&P 500 drops in half to 5% per year.
How many years was that? Sorry.
30 years?
Yeah.
30 years.
So 22 days
yes.
were the key days.
Yep. Absolutely. And that source was from BTN Research. Over the decades from July 1st, 2011 to June 30th, 2021, U.S. export prices rose just 4.6%. Over the 1 year from July 1st, 2021 to June 30th, 2022, U.S. export prices rose 18.2%, and that source is from Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Wow, huge increases, right?
Very
obviously
nice.
Contributing to that 8.5 to 9% inflation rate we've seen in the last year or so, depending on the day of the week we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. The annual increases applied to Social Security retirement benefits as of January 1st, 2023, is based on the Consumer Price Index inflation over the 12 months ending in September 30th, 2022. Inflation over the 9 months from October 1st to 2021 through June 30th, 2022 has been reported and is 8.7%. The Social Security cost of living adjustment has been at least 10%, just twice in history, 14.3% in 1980, 11.2% in 1981, and that source is Department of Labor.
So it looks like we may be somewhere in the 9% increase range for Social Security this year. So for someone who's getting, $2,000 a month, that's going to be about $180 a month increase, approximately.
Mm-hmm. But then they usually increase Medicare premiums, too. Yeah. That's so. The downside, right?
Yeah, that'll never happen. Yeah.
Social Security benefits are 96% funded by payroll taxes and 4% funded by income taxes paid on Social Security benefits. Hmm. Payroll taxes have been 6.2% for employees and 6.2% for employees since 1990.
And that's so employees and employers each
right.
are paying 6.2%
exactly.
for payroll taxes.
Yep. So no change for 32 years.
Uh-oh. Yep.
Well, what has changed is the amount that is taxable. So the dollar amounts that are subject to that
yes.
tax have been increased dramatically.
But the percentage.
Yeah. The percentage has remained the same.
Exactly. Yeah. And that source was from Congressional Budget Office.
Wow. So there's a lot going on out there. Now, next is in case you were to win the lottery,
what should you do first?
Well, we only bring this up because this last one was a little over a billion. I think it was $1.3 billion, was it not, Ron?
Yeah, we haven't heard from anybody yet.
No.
There's an Illinois. What if somebody bought it and it doesn't even have the ticket? They threw it out or something.
Yeah, or they can't find
then
it.
Then they're out. They're out. Wouldn't that be interesting? Where does that go back to? Who gets that money? And how long do they have to? I think they have to claim it within a year, do they not?
I think the president gets the money.
No. El Presidente. No. Well, that's that could make that position certainly more interesting to a lot of people. Yes, I'm running for president. So in determining, we thought this interesting, in determining a lump sum, well, the first thing they say you should do is sign the ticket and put it in a safe deposit box, right?
Oh,
yes.
But you know what? They had a club. Somebody went out in New Hampshire, big, huge jackpot.
Yes.
They signed it like they were advised to. Then they decided, based on their tax experts, they wanted to create a club. And they couldn't because they had signed it as an individual.
Ah.
So you can't create a club after the fact for tax purposes if you sign it.
But I think the key
thing. If you don't sign it, then somebody finds it. It's theirs.
But the key thing, I think, is putting it in a safety deposit box or, somewhere
protected,
very secure.
Correct. Now, why would you want to know about the tax? According to my memory, the approximate lump sum derived from that was going to be $747 million or so. Now, the tax on that, from my recollection, yeah, the lump sum itself, the announced jackpot, was $1.33 billion. That is an average of approximately $44 million per year for 30 years. So, in essence, the determination is how much tax am I going to pay, given those two scenarios. Let's say I want to take the lump sum or the income. I haven't decided which. I don't want to do any fancy tax planning. I'm just going to take one or the other. Well, what is the equivalent interest rate that I'm getting on those funds as a part of it? And do I trust myself? to get a paltry $44.5 million per year. I mean, you're earning almost as much as Tom Brady is from being a quarterback on a yearly basis, not including all those other endorsements, of course.
Of course.
So the payout will be cut down to about $780 million because that is a lump sum payout. Now, what's interesting is the tax on that, the tax bill, top federal tax rate, rather, is set to rise to 39.6% starting in 26. Top federal tax rate right now is 37%.
Yeah, so you could save a little.
Yeah, you could save some. Now, if you were opting for the 30 years of annuity payments, you'd pay something in the neighborhood of $16.5 million, according to this article here.
Per year.
$16.5 million in federal income tax per year for the first 4 years. And then the IRS will also automatically take 24% of the winnings off the top, and they will owe the rest at tax time. Lucky winner will owe around $17.65 million per year for the remaining 26 payments, given that the tax brackets are set to go up automatically in 25. That's, of course, without any new legislation that might occur, assuming that the tax brackets don't go up.
That's if you take the annual payout.
Right? The annual payout, correct. So you really want to take a look at that, too. Where do I anticipate tax rates going? And why would I want to take a annual sum? That could really take away some of the value of that payment, assuming that taxes went up, let's say, an average of 5% a year. So that's another great way, a thing to look at, a lump sum now versus that income in the future.
I heard if you pass away 2 years into it, if you're taking the annuity, the rest of it doesn't go to an heir. I don't know if that's true.
Really?
You know, that, like you mentioned, some pensions you mentioned, they don't go to your spouse afterwards. I have to look that up. I'm curious.
Yeah, that is a great question. So is this a life-only payout? Is that the case?
That's an argument for the lump sum.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Is it a huge argument for the lump sum? Now, if the winner takes the $780 million lump sum payment, he or she will pay about $288 million, there it is, in federal income tax for the 22 tax year. $288 million.
Oh.
So in terms of, go ahead, Ron, you've got something
here. I was going to say Powerball says, if a jackpot winner dies before receiving all annual installments, the balance of the prize will be paid to the winner's estate.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Upon receipt of a court order, annual prize payments will continue to be paid to the winner's heirs. So that's good to know.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's great. So a part of this is, do I want to pay all that in tax? That's where setting up foundations and or charitable trusts or other charitable planning, using other charitable planning tactics. That's why Warren Buffett has done this. And when you're in that range, that's where these programs can make an incredible difference. It's $288 million in saved taxes. That what a huge boon that could be for charity,
yeah,
as well as yourself for serving on that board that's overseeing this. So you get the energy from that, from helping to serve or oversee that, which is a lot of responsibility. We get that. But how could you set that up so you could benefit charity in the long term and benefit yourself and avoid the tax on that? That tax avoidance tactic, if you will, could prove to be, well, obviously tens of millions and in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars in avoided tax just by making some of those decisions up front and really looking at what are my charitable options, my charitable gifting options, my charitable remainder trust options. I might want to take that income for a while, which you can do. So you can, even though you're giving this to charity, under a charitable remainder trust, you can still take the income from this at about a 5 to 6% rate based on that crazy high number of $700 million. 5% of that is $35 million per year already. So think about that. You would get the same income expected for lifetime that you would on the annuitization side, but you'd get most of it on a tax advantage basis. And at your death or deaths of you and your spouse, all that money would pass on to charity. So already you've used this to leverage your financial situation dramatically. Isn't that incredible? Just to think about, you know, a rough sketch of what that would look like. And obviously all this would have to be determined. You'd have to take a look at the current tax code, the tax advantages of these different plans, and compare them and get illustrations from those firms that offer this kind of service.
So what you're saying, Dennis, is after you put the ticket in the safety deposit box, then you go see your financial advisor and your accountant
and your attorney
before you make any decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, isn't that just incredible, just from a thumbnail sketch, if you will, of what this looks like?
Would you, I think with an attorney, you have client attorney-client privilege, they have to be quiet. But like if someone came to you and brought their attorney and maybe their CPA and said, all right, this is all quiet, confidential. I want your professional advice. We're going to pay you for your professional, but I don't want even your spouses to know about this. Do you, I mean, in your profession, do you have any code or honor that? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's confidential.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You bet.
Because that'd be part of the thing is somebody'd want that advice, but they just they're in the phase where they want to keep it quiet.
Oh my gosh, it's that's incredibly important. So obviously you're going to want to have that discussion with your advisors, and or even some kind of legal document.
I'm asking as if I'm like about to win the lottery here or something, right?
Yeah, well, we want to make sure you're well-prepared.
Thank you.
When that happens.
Yeah. I mean, confidentiality is obviously key in that instance, you bet.
Yeah.
Bet. Great point. All right. So if you don't happen to miss this show, the rebroadcast on Saturday, we also have the podcast usually posted in about 2 weeks on proutfinancialdesign.com. And also some other, another announcement here too.
Yes, Dan. We have classes coming up. It's called Retirement Planning Today, and those classes will be in October 13th and 20th and 18th and the 25th. So call us if you have any questions on that. We'd love for you to attend. It's never too early to be planning for your retirement.
You bet. Right. That's a great course. We've been teaching it for years and offered through NMC, the Extended Ed Department. Say those dates again, if you would, Deanne.
October 13th and 20th and October 18th and 25th.
And are those Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Correct.
Yeah, it's a two-part class. Mm-hmm. Like, you have one class, and then you come again the next week for the second part.
So call Prout to schedule or NMC?
Call Prout to schedule for right now.
Okay.
And that is 947-3992. We'll be happy to sign you up for that. You'll get a nice workbook as a part of it. And the times on that are what? What are the times? 6:30 to 9, I think it is.
And soon you'll have classes like that in your new digs.
That's
next
great
year.
Great point. You bet. Nice. November 1st, we're set to move in, it looks like.
All right, Dennis, Heidi, and Deanne, thank you very much. Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio.